Welcome back. My next guest is known for his high level of personal commitment to clients and is a member of the real estate practice of Cole Shots. He counsels developers, real estate equity and opportunity funds, real estate investment trusts, investors, owners, and tenants in all aspects of commercial real estate transactions. Practices is national in scope, encompassing a broad range of transactions with particular emphasis on acquisitions, dispositions, development, and retail leasing in the state of New York specifically. I'm here right now with, from the law firm of Cole Shots, Robert DePizza. Robert, thanks for being on with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So New York has gone through quite a few changes. We're going to go through something really quickly in terms of what has changed recently. I want to take this from your team's blog at coleshots.com. And it's the fact of the matter is that third-party advertising now gets the green light in New York's adult-use market. You made the point and said that cannabis retailers in New York can now reach customers through digital sites and e-commerce platforms because of a decision to overturn the state's ban on third-party cannabis marketing. And specifically, it was Leafly that was put up the suit in front. And the amended decision now comes from an original holding that invalidated all 8 sections of New York's cannabis regulations, and the marketing ban prevented retailers from advertising their merchandise on third-party platforms. And Leafly was one of those that sued the Office of Cannabis Management and the Attorney General's Office, arguing the ban was unconstitutionally restricting the right to free speech. And the Justice Kevin Bryant agreed that the OCM failed to establish a factual basis for adapting the marketing ban. So this opportunity now for, while there's still a limited amount of dispensaries, a lot of cultivators that are open in the space so far legally, because the licensing process has been such, that pipeline has been such a struggle. But, you know, what, talking about the significance of this ruling.
Okay. So the significance of the ruling, I guess, from a marketing perspective and as a way to draw companies such as Leafly into the New York market is important, because when you have a market like New York, specifically New York City, where you have so many illicit operators, companies and third-party platforms like Leafly direct consumer to those licensed operators in the state of New York, right? And obviously because of, if anyone's been to New York City recently, you can throw a stone and hit 2 or 3 illicit dispensaries that are operating without a license. And the problem with that is, to the uneducated consumer or tourist, they can't distinguish between those that are unlicensed and those that are licensed. And therefore, they are purchasing and consuming products that have not gone through the same rigorous process that, you know, those licensed products have gone through when it comes to testing, making sure that product is free of contaminants. So what this ruling does, and by permitting Leafly and other third-party platforms to operate in the state of New York, is it provides a pathway for consumers to become more educated, and it directs them towards those licensed shops, which is very valuable. Also, it gives a little bit of a sigh of relief to the retailers, right? Now they can advertise on these third-party platforms. They don't need to extend themselves that much more beyond their brick and mortar shop, because let's face it, just because they're advertising sales or products on their own website doesn't mean that an uneducated consumer is going to be able to navigate their way to that website to see those sales and see those products. So I view it as kind of a win-win, and it wasn't practical to exclude companies like Leafly. And let's not forget, Leafly is not going to provide their services to New York consumers unless there's some revenue stream to actually justify and provide the financing for that research and those resources to show where those licensed shops are.
In the blog post as well, the conclusion of all this basically says that they say that inevitably more third-party e-commerce companies will be able to expand into the New York market, and correct, consumers will now be able to have access to information about legal dispensaries, allowing them to make more informed purchasing decisions. Now, that's great news, but again, it's about, you know, allowing the access and the ability to go to market for the legal market, while the illicit market's been able to just go rush out and do whatever they want.
Correct. And the problem is that, or at least what the mayor has indicated, is that they do not have the resources and or the authority from Albany to go in and shut down all of these shops. Now they've done it from time to time. And a lot of times it's over advertised, obviously, and it's almost like a situation where, you know, it's used to deter other operators from operating. Look, we are shutting these down. We are enforcing the rules, but at the end of the day, they don't have the resources to shut them all down. And what we're finding is that although they're over advertising these shutdowns, it's not really deterring those illicit operators from closing up shop. One of the other things that I think we need to be focused on the Leafly litigation is the ruling from Wednesday. The original ruling that was made public on Wednesday, and then we received a revised ruling on Thursday. And I'm going to explain what the significance is and why it's important. So the initial ruling on the Leafly litigation, what the judge did is he not only addressed the third-party advertising issue, but he also struck down a large portion of the regulations, more importantly, the application and licensing process within the regs. And then what happened was a little bit of hysteria, right, on the side of the operators to say, well, what does this mean? What does this mean for the validity of my license? And then a revised ruling came out on Thursday, which scaled it back and focused on just the issue that was being adjudicated, which is third-party advertising. But why is the Wednesday ruling still dangerous and something we should be paying attention to? Why we should pay attention to it is because what it essentially does is provide a roadmap for future plaintiffs to see which sections of the regulations the judge felt violated the Constitution in New York. These lawsuits aren't over. They're going to continue. I don't see them ending anytime soon. And because of the ruling on Wednesday, future plaintiffs can look at that and say, oh, okay, the judge struck down this portion of the regulations, applications, licensing. So when I file my lawsuit, I have some kind of basis because here a judge deemed this constitutional for some reason. So this is where I should focus. Future plaintiffs should be focusing. That's what's dangerous about the Leafly litigation. Is that Wednesday ruling and what it means for future plaintiffs in the New York market?
We talk about the illicit market and we talk about the issues that are going on. And there's a story that came out from timeout.com about finding out which stores, dispensaries are legal or and licensed in New York because of the issues of the crackdown. And, when you talk about just all these issues that are going on, that supposedly, okay, the governor now, Governor Hochul, is going to have a new plan to shut down shops, protect legal and licensed marketplaces in the budget coming up for fiscal year 2025, where the Office of Cannabis Management and local municipalities will be able to have action taken against illegal stores and those who enable them, and that their strongest set of policies thus far to enact. So, they say also that they're going to try to inspect and padlock businesses of the illicit sell illicit cannabis and pose an imminent threat. And anyone who tries to remove or damage a padlock will be slapped with a misdemeanor. Okay, so to do this here. And I mean, does that really make much of a difference at this point? Is that any kind of cause for, a pause at all for companies to feel like they should feel good that that's something they're going to be doing as the next course of action? It's just to,
Well,
padlock these places up.
yeah, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, what we have here is we have the licensed and regulated operators who have jumped through all the hoops, spent all of this money to do things the right way. And I think when they see the illicit operators continuing to operate and actually, essentially cutting in and saturating the market by cutting into the revenue that should be going to the licensed operators, I mean, it's discouraging, right? It acts as a deterrent too for other operators to go through the regulatory process and get their license until this all gets shaken out. I mean, while I like hearing that, it's almost, I mean, I'll believe it when I see it. I'll see it when the budget is put in place, when the money flows and they start shutting down these shops. But I mean, I've been in the position where I represent a landlord where a tenant misrepresented what they were going to be doing. The tenant is selling THC products when they said that they were only going to be selling CBD products, and just as a distinction, so the CBD product can't have more than 0.03% THC on a dry weight basis. So the tenant's violating it. The landlord's been trying to get the tenant out. We provided notice to the OCM, to the enforcement division, to inform them of this, but nothing has happened. And, the responses that you get are, yeah, okay, we've noted it, but there's no action. So here you have a situation where you have a landlord explaining to the OCM, hey, this shop is violating your law. And, at this point, it's been, I guess, over 2 months and we haven't seen anything. No action.
A few of the other things they put in this Time Out article. So there's reportedly about 1,500 to 2,000 dispensaries that do not have a license from New York State. Meanwhile, as a publication, according to this, this is April 22nd, they published this, 112 licensed dispensaries in New York State, 44 in New York City. And that's according to the Office of Cannabis, the OCM's website. And the dispensaries, to make sure that you know that they're legit, they have a QR code you can scan to see the Office of Cannabis Management's website with a list of all licensed adult use cannabis dispensaries. And you should be able to see a lapel with the logo with the QR code on the store. I don't know if this is like that's quite a ratio over the, like lopsided as to where we are. So you're
Oh,
telling
yeah.
me, New York citizen, that the Office of Cannabis Management is going to be able to go and deploy law enforcement to padlock. And the thing is, what did I read about the other day? Oh, that the boots they used to use to go and like go after people that were parking illegally on on the sidewalks, parallel parking. Then they're now going to put something else on top of the windshield instead. You're telling me that people can't, cut down and take off the padlocks. They can't find a way to go ahead and
I
like cut
mean,
it off. Like, come
I'm
on.
sure you've seen the videos of people driving with a boot on their car.
Yes, I have. And now they're going to change it. Oh, well, they're going to be like Ace Ventura Pet Detective. Like, they're going to have their head out the window, be able to get their car wherever they have to go. And
Yes.
of course, they have to go and go past Manhattan where they have to go and try to avoid paying the $40 fee you have to pay a day or whatever to go and drive into the
Yeah.
city. Like,
Yeah.
what a mess over there. I'm
Yeah.
sorry. It's just, I
Yeah.
see this and it's just the things you learn on TikTok. It's amazing.
And back and forth, people are always looking at New Jersey and New York and comparing them because obviously they're right across the river from each other. And I've talked to so many people about this. So why is New York having all these problems and New Jersey isn't? And I remember back in 2018, people were looking at both and saying, who's going to flip first, right? It was really that close. And, people forget that New Jersey had its own problems. I mean, there was a lawsuit back from 2018, 2019, where there was a stay proceeding put in place. Eight of the applicants for New Jersey licenses were disqualified off the bat, and there was a lawsuit about the process by which the CRC in New Jersey reviewed and approved those applications. And I think it was about a year and a half where those who applied were literally at a standstill. They had to maintain the real estate that they got for their operations. They were just siphoning money out of the companies.
Right.
So I don't know, people forget, but New Jersey had its own issues, but nowhere near as much as New York is having. I would say with respect to the volume of lawsuits, but again, New York kind of, the MRTA said one thing, for instance, in the Fiore litigation that went on this summer, the MRTA said that all these licenses needed to be released at the same time. And while New York was permitted to give preference to social equity applicants and other preferential categories, they didn't follow the MRTA. They made the licenses exclusive to those social equity type applicants for a certain period of time. So at the same time, New York hasn't helped themselves, throughout this whole process and kind of put themselves in a spot where they definitely have exposure to these types of lawsuits, which will continue.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Mentioned New Jersey, because I know there's quite a bit that you do in terms of that, and let's go and focus on that now. So just this past weekend, after 420, we've now had 2 years of adult use sales in New Jersey, and you got more about 130 some odd stores now, open retail sites, and more cultivators opening up, and more manufacturers every day. So the Cannabis Regulatory Commission there, and Jeff Brown, the executive director there, says it's a huge milestone that we're already at this point. And there's still some barriers to try to get through because of the issues with licensing. But again, they got it better off. They're roughly a few months ahead of New York State in terms of adult use. What is it that you see that's the difference between both by looking at both markets?
It's a great question. And I've racked my brain over this a lot because I have to be honest, New Jersey is not perfect.
Right.
And there are lawsuits going on in New York where, like, for instance, the Verisite litigation, where out-of-state operators are stating that by giving New York residents preference and discriminating against out-of-state operators, it's negatively affecting interstate commerce. And for that reason, there's exposure and liability with respect to the New York program. But I mean, New Jersey has the same type of requirements. You look at the regulations in New Jersey, and you do need to have New Jersey residents involved as an owner. And there's different levels of that, right? So if it's a micro business license in New Jersey, everybody needs to be a New Jersey resident. So there is a correlation between the New York regs and the New Jersey regs. They include the same type of issues, but yet New York is the one that is being the lightning rod for all the litigation. And part of it is, and what I was thinking about, and I've talked to others about, is it because New York is just such a mecca where every single operator who is looking to build a brand, because listen, at the end of the day, cannabis is coming down to brands. Everyone's trying to build the brand. And this may look like the alcohol industry, 10, 15, 20 years from now, where you have six or seven companies that just own all the brands, right? And I guess because of New York and because of its status, if you are building a brand, I feel like that is a jurisdiction where you need to plant your flag in the ground and have a retail location or a presence in the New York market in order to build your brand awareness. So maybe there's just much more eyes on New York than there are in New Jersey. And I mean, it might be as simple as that. That's why we're having all these challenges in New York and not New
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Jersey, because listen, did the CRC do a better job than the OCM? Yeah, but I see issues in both sets of regulations and the same type of issues, but yet New York is experiencing much more litigation than New Jersey did. So it's kind of hard to say.
I want to focus on the cultivation side.
Yeah.
And we'll start with New Jersey first, because as you mentioned, with New Jersey residents being involved in the process here, one of the areas they want to go look at is home cultivation. So there is a new bill being sponsored by a state senator, and the chief sponsored the bill for allowing medical marijuana patients to grow cannabis, and another that would allow expanding up to 10 plants for medical patients and six plants for adult use users. And right now it's a standstill in New Jersey that the only people allowed to grow marijuana are those with cultivator licenses. And Senate President Nicholas Scutari has previously voiced hesitancy over home grow programs, saying it would stunt the growth of the legal industry, allow underground markets to flourish without regulations. I'm actually surprised that we haven't heard anything more about this, but in New York, they've been much more focused on social equity. That's been their
Yeah.
priority first and foremost. We've talked to so many people from New York. With New Jersey, I don't know what would be the sense of this, but also the idea of home grows, I don't ever hear much about that with New York. I never hear anything about that with New Jersey, really.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, if someone thinks that home grows are going to usurp the legal market, I don't think they've ever tried to cultivate cannabis themselves and realize how difficult it is. One, and then two, it's really a social equity type issue, the way I look at it. I mean, listen, if anybody has purchased cannabis in the state of New Jersey, or even for New York for that matter, it is extremely expensive. Extremely expensive. So if you, I mean, listen, if you have the skills, you educate yourself and you can grow up to six plants for your own personal use. I mean, I don't really see how that is going to undermine the legal market. I view it as a social equity issue. I think that especially when it comes to medical cannabis, if people want to try to cultivate at home, let them do it. I think they're going to find out very quickly how difficult it is. And at the end of the day, they're going to end up going to the dispensary themselves. But at least give people the option so that, those people who are suffering from chronic illnesses or terminally ill do not need the additional financial burden of purchasing cannabis products at a dispensary when, if they can, if they themselves or a caregiver can cultivate their own cannabis at home. I just think it's unlikely for something like that to really have such an effect on the legal market that we're going to even see it on the radar. I just don't.
Now, from home cultivators to the licensed large-scale cultivators in New York State, there was an issue also coming out from Benzinga that made the report about how in the proposed 2024 state budget, they're not going to include what has been proposed, a cannabis farmers relief fund. And that would have been about $120 million in aid through grants, loans, and tax credits. And that would have helped out to give securing financial relief for New York's 289 licensed cannabis farmers, leaving them disheartened and facing significant financial losses because of that. So again, only what, 289 farmers to service only 44 licensed dispensaries that we have out there so far, or 100 roughly in the state. Like, I mean, I don't even know how they can go and keep up with, with what they can go and grow, where they can go ahead and take care of that supply they have, because there's not enough stores that have the demand.
Correct. And it's funny because the cultivators have really taken it on the chin. I mean, first of all, I think in any jurisdiction, cultivation is the most expensive side of the operation. I mean, listen, it's the sexiest, right? So a lot of people have interest in it. They want to cultivate, the best strain, and they want to be, have their own brand where it's, they're cultivating, their own products. And that's true, but a lot of times they end up white labeling for a lot of different companies. And it's just, especially in New York, I don't know if you remember, but we had the way it was supposed to work in New York was a waterfall effect where, those who had a license to cultivate hemp were the first ones who got a crack at a cultivation license for the adult use market in New York. And then what happened was there was this big stall and delay on the retail market. Part of it's because of the Fiore litigation, but so now you had all these cultivators with all of this product with no place to sell. And that product would eventually, potentially be susceptible to mold. So what also, there's a certain time period on that product for it to be sold and consumed. Now the OCM gave some flexibility there, but what ended up happening is the cultivators out of necessity had to process all of that product into oils and different kind of extracts, because otherwise they would have lost a lot of money and continue to do so. So I don't see, without the grant money, I think it's just going to be even more of a pinch on the cultivation side of the business. And I think that once, New York gets up to speed, similar to what's happening in New Jersey, where we have dispensaries opening on a monthly basis, five at a time, six at a time. Now you're running into a bit of a supply chain issue, which we may see in New York, right? Because you can't just ship this out of state to a different state that has, a deficit when you have a surplus. It all has to stay intrastate. So I think that, at the end of the day, as New York picks up steam, all these retail locations open up. And the cultivators aren't in a position to have this grant money to expand their operations, we might run into a supply chain issue in New York, which is going to result in the price of wholesale flower to skyrocket and then more increased prices. So.
I mean, right now you have so much that's already putting more expense on operators. And to follow up on the first thing we talked about in the start of the interview about Leafly and the laws that was put in place when it comes to third-party marketing, there was more that you had said to cannabis business executive about this in terms of, the struggles that operators have right now anyway, because you mentioned that the judge in that case, that there was no discernible foundation for the regulations, that you mentioned that at the end, there won't be surprised there's going to be more lawsuits, and the lawsuits in the New York market are not going to be continuous. Is that existing licensing holders that you have and operators making financial decisions based on the current regulations to ensure compliance with the regs, And you know, if you're there are going to be obstacles where these regulators are going to be voided or altered or changed, and then you're going to have to make even more of a financial investment in shifting and altering your operations to comply with these continuously changing regulations, all it leads to is more expensive costs for operators who are already spread thin. So we just made the case about the fact that supply and demand is, you know, upside down right now for these people. There could always be lawsuits again that could shut down or try to attempt to shut down the industry again in adult use. It's all this is continues to go on. I mean, when you look at this, you know, what kind of panic or concern do you see from either from clients or just from other business owners right now that they see here? Because it's such a, the market is so fluctuating and a lot of instability in the OCM is under an overhaul right now.
No, it's a great question, and I think most of the concern from the clients, you hit it right on the head, right? With the decisions that they have to make based on the current regulations, they're making financial commitments, and knowing that these regulations are susceptible to change or potentially being deemed void. And the problem is that, you know, most of these entities, when they're created to receive the license, they're single purpose entities with no assets, right? So if you want to sign a lease or you want any kind of loan, the individuals have to personally guarantee that lease, personally guarantee that loan. So at the end of the day, they're not going to be able to just close up shop and walk away. You know, when you personally guarantee a lease, and just so people that aren't familiar with the process, if the license holding entity goes under, well, you individually, as the owner, are responsible to make those lease payments. You, as the individual owner, whether or not your company is successful or not, if it goes under, you are obligated to pay back that loan for the business that has fallen through. And, you know, people's lives are on the line, right? Their homes are exposed, their personal vehicles, their families. You know, these decisions aren't taken lightly. Because of the fact that the owners of these companies are personally invested. They put, you know, not only the business on the line, but their personal life on the line as well. So what we try to do is the best we can is make the decisions based on the regulations, but try not to overcommit financially. You know, try to offset costs as much as possible in order to ensure compliance, but give ourselves some flexibility if we need to pivot. If the regulations end up changing, it's a very difficult position to be. Look at any other business where there are laws that apply. I mean, even just in the alcohol industry, no other business in the alcohol industry needs to anticipate that all of the laws that apply to alcohol consumption in the state of New York could potentially change a year from now, or 2 years from now, or even less. You know, it's a very difficult spot to be in.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Robert, before we wrap things up, I have to just ask about this because there was an amazing. Now, in here on Cannabis Radio, we do talk quite a bit about plant medicine in general. So, you know, it was a couple of years ago we started really delving into areas of psychedelics. And New Jersey right now is reintroducing a bill, and you actually commented to Forbes about it. It's the Psilocybin Behavioral Health and Access and Services Act. And it was being pulled back last year for revisions, but it's focused on treating mental health issues, decriminalizing recreational use for anyone 21 and older who possesses 4 grams or less of psilocybin or mushrooms, and unlike cannabis, would be allowed to grow their own mushrooms for personal use in their homes. And if New Jersey allows it, it'll be the third state besides Oregon and Colorado to legalize psilocybin, first on the East Coast. You speculated that the bill should be introduced. There should be some support for the measure. And the question is when. You said, quote, "My guess is they're not going to put up for vote until they have enough votes to pass it." So from what you're seeing so far right now, I mean, what do you see about the chances of this bill making up for a vote? And, you know, the significance of seeing psilocybin or mushrooms being allowed to go ahead and be legal in New Jersey.
So New Jersey is usually not on the forefront of these measures. So it's kind of interesting where, you know, cannabis, you saw a progression started on the West Coast and then you saw it make its way to the East Coast. But here with psilocybin, you have a situation where New Jersey is going to be potentially the third jurisdiction who would permit it for medical purposes. Based on my review of the bill, they make a distinction. I don't think there are some similarities when you look at the medicinal cannabis program in New Jersey and the psilocybin medicinal program in New Jersey. There are some similarities, but when I view the psilocybin bill, it's a bit of a sea change. And I think just based on the language itself, it's not indicative to me that it will ever be permitted for adult use in New Jersey. And it seems to me that it is very specific to medicinal purposes, even the way it works with consumption. The consumption has to take place on site with the supervision of a trained professional. It's a different program. And that's kind of where I see it having more legs. I think that if it closely tracked the medicinal cannabis program in New Jersey, and as we saw, that eventually, actually pretty quickly flipped to adult use. I think the biggest concern for the legislatures is, approving it for medicinal purposes and eventually it becoming permitted for adult use. I think that while cannabis has become less and less taboo over the years and has become more acceptable, I think that a lot of the legislature will not get there on psilocybin. So I think that based on my review of the most recent bill, and provided that it stays the course and sticks to some pretty rigorous requirements when it comes to the medical consumption, I think that it will have legs. I think as soon as it comes up for a vote, like I said earlier, you're going to know it's going to pass because I don't think they're going to put it up unless it has the support. By the way, I don't think that they would have come out with a revised bill if they didn't think there was a pathway for it to get approved. Usually the bill would just die and it just wouldn't come back to life. But here we got a revised version and within a relatively short period of time. So I think that they do see some promise here for it to eventually pass in New Jersey. And again, I don't think it's really a question of if, but when, and will New Jersey be that, jurisdiction that's on the forefront of psilocybin or not? Only time's really going to tell, but we'll have to wait and see.
So Cold Shots, let's go and talk about the fact that you have the cannabis practice there. And specifically, which markets do you specifically serve? Is it New York and New Jersey? And if for those that want to go to the website, it's coldshots.com, coldshots.com. When you go to the website, you can go ahead and find out about the services. So how should you go ahead and reach out to your team and what you're able to do in terms of helping out in the cannabis firm part of the practice?
Yeah, absolutely. Visit the website. Our information's on there. You can reach out to me. And it's really our focus now has really become East Coast focus. We do a little bit of work in the Midwest, but our sweet spot is the East Coast. That's where we have our, roots in the ground. That's where our offices are. That's where our relationships are. And that's where we really have the experience in the cannabis space and kind of where we want to stick to. I don't want to play in someone else's sandbox, although we've done work in the California markets and the West Coast markets. I think that, we like to stick to those markets that we know and we're comfortable in. So I view our cannabis practice as primarily East Coast practice.
Really appreciate you taking time to go and talk to us, Robert. Again, Robert DePisa from Cold Shots. Thank you all for being on here and talking to us about New York and New Jersey's cannabis markets and all the issues going around it. Really do appreciate you taking time out.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And thank you, listeners. We'll be talking to you next time.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.